Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 254, recorded on February 17th for air on Monday, June 20th, 2016. Case, Lynx, and Green Peak. Triangulation is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/triangulation. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free without a credit card at carbonite.com today. And use the offer code TRIANGULATION to get 2 free bonus months when you decide to buy. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology and spend some time learning about them and about stuff. And I am thrilled to have a pioneer. Once again, we often do pioneers on this show. But a pioneer you may not have heard of, Case Lynx, is here. He's currently with Green Peak Technologies. But Case goes back to some very early days. Oh, basically, wireless is your thing, Case. Welcome to Triangulation.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
Is everything you do about wireless, pretty much?
The last 25, 30 years, yes.
Before that, what was it?
Before that, I came from university. So, yeah.
What did you study in university?
Mathematics.
Math.
Just
not computer science, electric engineering.
Well, I mean, that were all kind of the subjects in there. So, you know, making chess computers and all that kind of stuff.
Wow. As a chess player, I love the idea of chess computers. I hate the fact of chess computers. When you were doing it, there were those standalone devices and you'd move a piece. Some of the fancy ones had magnets in the bottom would move the piece.
Exactly.
I had a few of those. And they got better and better. And then pretty soon you couldn't beat them.
No.
But that turned out to be an easy problem compared to Go.
Have you been following that? Yeah, I've been following that too.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. You know.
Why do you think Go is so much harder than chess?
Because it's, in the way, it's way more complex because of its simplicity.
Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting, right?
Because chess, it looks complex, 64 squares. You have, six different kinds of pieces. Almost infinite number of possibilities, which is always amazing when you look at it.
Because
they all start the same 10 moves, and then who knows what's going to happen. In fact, Bobby Fischer, I remember, hated the standard setup so much he invented a random form of chess.
Yeah, I know.
Where the back rank would get randomized.
Right.
I play that a little bit because I don't want to go against the guys who memorized the first 25 moves.
Yeah.
But Go is just two black and white stones, much bigger board.
And that's why the complexity explodes way faster.
Yeah.
And that's
computers are good at pattern matching, though, right? So you'd think that would be a natural for Go.
No. Pattern matching is very difficult for computers. Right?
Is it?
Yeah.
Babies can look at a face and know immediately it's their mama.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Computers need to kind of study for years.
So how did you start doing wireless?
Well, actually, just running into some friends and talking with each other. What was getting quite popular in, and I'm talking now late 80s of the previous century.
Early days of the PC revolution.
Early days of the PC, but you had cordless phones.
That's right.
No cellular phones.
That's right.
They were just being invented. But cordless phones were
And they were at 900 megahertz and 700
900 megahertz, these big things with these long antennas.
Yeah.
So, and you know, this was kind of having a chat at a McDonald's or, you know.
There's a McDonald's in Utrecht?
There's a McDonald's in Utrecht. And we said,
Now I'm sad.
Wouldn't it be nice if there would be, wouldn't it be nice if there would be something like Wi-Fi? We didn't call it Wi-Fi in those years. But just cordless phones, why wouldn't you have cordless computers?
What a convenience. Before cordless phones, you had this long cord. You could get wrapped around you.
Right.
So it was easy to see that was a technology that made sense for consumers.
That's what you would think. But we had products in the early 90s, and people didn't believe it could work. They thought, you know, your data got lost in the air. People are concerned about health. There were a
thousand. They're still concerned about health.
And they're still concerned about
health. They never stopped. Right?
But now the very interesting thing is we had first products early 1991. And the real market breakthrough was 1999 with Apple.
Yeah, you convinced Steve Jobs that Wi-Fi was the thing.
Well, I got a call from Steve Jobs that he was looking for something that that we had, something like wireless, that he wanted to use to differentiate his iBook with, compared to other laptops in the market.
So laptops didn't have Wi-Fi.
Until 1999.
You Ethernet connected them.
What you maybe remember these pocket LAN adapters.
Yes, I remember. Credit card. They were the PCMCIA cards.
No, even before that, you had you plugged it into your printer port.
And then
you plugged your Ethernet card in there.
It was a Centronics port on the back?
Exactly. Exactly.
I do remember that. And then it was really a modem as much as...
And you had the modems, right?
Yeah.
The what is it? The exactly. Well, replacing that modem, that was the first thing, you know.
Yeah.
You had always had that wire to the phone line. And we said, you know, can we do that wireless?
Yeah.
So replacing that wire was the first. But the funny part is today, if I ask my son, do you know there was life before Wi-Fi?
You know, I was in the early 90s doing computer talk radio shows, and people would say, oh, yeah, we're going to build a house. What should we do for... It wasn't internet in those days, because people weren't going online to the mid-90s.
Right.
So maybe it was a little bit later. And you'd always say, oh, yeah, well, you definitely want to put Cat5 in the wall and maybe coaxial cable.
We have Cat5 in every room in our house.
We're so wrong.
How wrong can it be, right? Who knew
that it was going to... That was, the wireless revolution totally took over.
Right, exactly.
We're talking to Case Links. He's CEO of Greenpeak, which is a Zigbee company. We're going to talk about the next step in wireless and Internet of Things, which is fascinating.
We'll have more with Case in just a bit, but first a word from our sponsor today, Triangulation, brought to you by Texture. You know what texture is. Oh, I love texture. I love magazines. Magazines still, they're an art form all their own, right? Long form articles, great images, great pictures. The problem with magazines is it can add up. You know, there's like, I would say half a dozen magazines every month I want to read at least one article in. But if I were to buy them, you know, that's like 30 or 40 bucks. If I were to subscribe, even worse. I got a better solution for you. Every magazine, you know, all the best magazines, kind of like Netflix for magazines, on your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device for one flat rate that's like a couple of cups of coffee a month. I'm talking texture. For instance, there's always, every week, there's a New Yorker article I want to read. I love the photo layouts in National Geographic. And by the way, they look even better, higher res, higher quality on your iPad than they do on print. Rolling Stone, always one article every month I want to read. Esquire, Vanity Fair, I can go on and on. And then, you know, you also get the gossip magazines. You got People and Us and Entertainment Weekly, so I can kind of keep up on what's going on with The Bachelorette, you know, all that stuff. I love this. Every page in the newsstand issue of your favorite magazines, plus previous issues, you favorite the magazines you know you want. They'll download. You can read them offline. You could, if you travel a lot, don't buy. I always bought a stack of magazines to get on the plane. Not anymore. You got your texture. Here's the deal. Go to texture.com/triangulation for a free trial. You can even share with your family. So you really only need one subscription per family. That's what Lisa and I do. We share our subscription. You can actually access up to 5 devices for one account. So everybody in the family can have their own magazines, all with one Texture account. You can read the magazines offline, of course. Just download them. Read them anytime, anywhere. They have also got, if you're not sure what you want to read, a new and noteworthy section, top stories section, curated category, content categories. So it's they've done it. This is just what you want. This is just what you want. And I want you to try it free. Texture.com/triangulation. Free trial. I think you're going to want to subscribe. There's 2 different levels. You just check it out and see which one you want. We've been happy subscribers for months now, Lisa and I, and we just love it. Texture.com/triangulation. And now, thank you for allowing me to interrupt, but back to our conversation with Case.
Welcome back to Triangulation. Case Links is our guest, CEO of Greenpeak, but a pioneer in Wi-Fi. we were talking about the early days of Wi-Fi. And in the early 90s, since people weren't really on the internet, they were, I guess it was dial-up modem to CompuServe or Genie or MCI
exactly.
Mail. Or
the emails were kind of getting popular.
Yeah.
So starting to replace fax.
Yeah.
So that's actually what was the first, I would say, the real application. That
was this at NCR off. When you were doing this?
NCR computers. That's when we did this.
Wow.
Dayton, Ohio.
Wow.
All places in the world.
Did you live in Dayton?
I was there very often.
Oh. Well, but you stayed in Utrecht.
And the whole effort of wireless LAN in NCR was run in Utrecht.
Interesting.
Right.
It's interesting. So you call it LAN.
Local area network.
But it really was, if it was just to a modem, it wasn't a LAN yet. I'm thinking in these early days, if you had one computer, that was it usually. You didn't have smartphones, tablets. You often didn't even have laptops.
Correct.
You had desktops,
right? Luggables. Remember, we call them luggables.
I have one in the basement. It's 30 pounds.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it was still. See, I often think that where things really went wrong was when we started to do networking in the house, because that was something designed for the IT professional.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, normal people had to learn about routers and switches and hubs and Wi-Fi access points. And this got the complexity just...
Right. But it has come a long way because,
it's much
easier
now.
I mean, you have a router, you plug it into a cable or into a DSL environment, and you can connect any device in your house. So
isn't it remarkable?
We have come a long way.
Yeah.
The first wireless LAN, I mean, the first Wi-Fi, we thought it was a standard and interoperable. Forget it. It
was. And now this is 802.11...
That's the underlying standard for
the very first
for the radio, correct.
Before B.
It was 802.11, 802.11B, 802.11A. It's funny. AA came out, and then G and N and AC. And
why did you choose 2.4 gigahertz?
Well, the first products we had were in the 900 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cordless phones. But the problem was that in Europe, the 900 megahertz was used for cellular phones.
Ah.
So then we looked for another frequency band. And the next frequency band that was available was the 2.4 gigahertz. But initially, it was not allowed to do data communications in the 2.4 gigahertz band. So we had to start lobbying in Brussels, we had to start lobbying in Tokyo, in Beijing, for making the 2.4 gigahertz a worldwide frequency band. And to our amazement, there was so much attention going into the cellular phone, in the cellular phone market, that it was kind of agreed on as a sideline. And all of a sudden, we have a 2.4 gigahertz band that is pretty much worldwide available.
And essentially unregulated.
And in a way, that's the power of Wi-Fi.
It's often used as an example of, see, this is why government regulation is a bad thing. Where did the innovation happen in wireless? It happened where entrepreneurs could innovate.
Exactly.
I didn't realize, though, that you were forbidden from doing data.
Initially, it was
in the Europe, U.S. as well, or
Europe? In Europe, it was initially forbidden for data.
And
even in Europe, every country had its own regulations.
Right.
For instance, even today, I believe, officially, the 2.4 gigahertz is owned by the French military, and you are officially only allowed to use Wi-Fi in the big cities and not in the rural areas. I mean, this is folklore almost. But
I imagine people still buy Wi-Fi routers in rural France,
It's now everywhere.
Nobody's stopping them.
No, nobody's stopping them.
It's interesting.
But it gives an idea of the local folklore of the 2.4 gigahertz that kind of, put together into a... that you can buy one product and ship it worldwide.
Yeah.
And that is the power of Wi-Fi as well. You have it in your laptop, and you don't have to worry if you go to another country.
Yeah.
You turn on your laptop in the hotel, you are on the internet.
It's pretty remarkable. So there are pros and cons to 2.4 gigahertz. It's a microwave, so it doesn't travel very far. That's probably a pro, right?
We call it spectral reuse. You can use the spectrum in your house, and the neighbor can use the spectrum in his house.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's a balance. If the range is too short, then you're not in your house.
Right.
If the range is too big, then you interfere with your neighbors. It's a kind of a lucky shot. that it works out with the range and what we have.
Yeah.
It was just right.
And even in most homes, can you go through walls as long as there's not metal on the walls? And
exactly.
Things like that.
Yep.
It's kind of remarkable.
we're very proud of it. Let me put it that way.
You should be. So the NCR was acquired by AT&T.
Correct.
And you were folded into Bell Labs, which then was spun out as Lucent, right?
As Lucent. That was the C. But I didn't even change my chair.
Didn't matter to you.
The only thing that changes was the business cards.
Yeah.
And we've been pioneering the standard, creating a IEEE working group. With quite some other companies as well. I mean, let's put it in perspective.
Yeah.
This is an effort, an industry effort.
As it should be, because you want it to be an open standard. You want anybody to be able to adopt it and use it, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yet that's a challenge because there's politics and these meetings, I'm sure, lots of
There's lots of politics. I mean, everybody thinks from inventing Wi-Fi to where we are today is a straight line. Mm-hmm. Oh, forget it.
What were the big hurdles? What was the first big hurdle? Besides, well, the first one was getting Europe and Brussels to agree.
Yeah, the first big hurdle was one frequency band worldwide because we had a 900 megahertz product. And, for instance, Apple and 3Com, another name from the past, 3Com told us, you know, come back if there's one frequency band worldwide.
So they didn't even want to look at it until that was universal.
No. I mean,
you'd have to have different radios. That's the problem we have a little bit with cell phones right now. That's also changing, isn't it? So that we're finally able to make universal cell phones. But you have to have 10 different radios.
Different radios inside.
Yeah.
And that's why there are now so few radio chip suppliers, because the complexity is tremendous.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, Qualcomm basically owns it, I guess.
Qualcomm, yeah. Intel.
Let's talk about the standards, too. So 802.11b comes along. About when did that come along?
The starting of the effort was mid-90s.
What was the goal with
1996.
B?
The goal was higher data rate. 802.11, without any letter, was two megabits.
I thought it was 1 megabit. 2 megabits.
It was 2 megabits
still
per second.
Still slow.
Yeah. But it's amazing how... Your modem was, 14.K?
Well, that's what... Right, you don't need 2 megabits... If you're on dial-up.
And most, initially, most, the Apple AirPort, that was the first breakthrough product, immediately connected to a dial-up line. That was it.
I had it.
You had it?
I remember it. Yeah,
It was
well.
Dial-up line. So,
Why did they call it an AirPort then? It's kind of landlocked AirPort.
Right.
Interesting that I did not realize that Apple made the first Wi-Fi in a computer.
Now, in a way, Intel was... with Centrino stole the show a little bit.
Yeah.
But the first product came from Apple.
So Centrino, the chipset had Wi-Fi in the Centrino chipset. That meant a motherboard would come with Wi-Fi.
With Wi-Fi. And that was about 1.5 to 2 years later.
Yeah.
So 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
That Intel came on board. The initial view of Intel was Bluetooth will take over the world.
No kidding.
And you don't need Wi-Fi.
No kidding.
And, you know, Centrino changed the mindset, changed the history almost, or the perception of the history, and made Intel one of the founders of Wi-Fi.
Why did Wi-Fi beat Bluetooth?
The higher data rate.
Data rate. And range.
And range, but in particular the networking capability. Bluetooth is very much a point-to-point connectivity, but, you know, you want it point-to-multipoint.
Right.
So...
But again, that's a little forward-thinking because in the earliest days, people didn't have multiple systems.
The first Apple iBook and AirPort was point-to-point.
Point-to-point. That's all you need. What are you going to have? You have two more than one AirBook, MacBook?
Right.
What are you, nuts?
Exactly.
What are you, rich?
And nowadays, I can remember how much effort it took because it took almost a decade to convince, that Wi-Fi would be a useful... thing to have.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I bet if you count the number of Wi-Fi nodes, we call them nodes in your house. Yeah, the number of devices that have Wi-Fi, tablets, smartphones, laptop, computers, your TV, your game station.
My Roku device. When I look at my router and I see all the things paired, I go, wow, there's like 20 or 30 devices.
There you go.
And that's probably very typical.
There you go.
And of course, with Internet of Things, it's my doorbell is connected now. So that's going to only take off. So was when you went from B to, what is it, then was G and then A, then N, Was that in every case increasing bandwidth?
Yeah, the major driver was higher data rate.
Yeah.
That was the major driver.
Are you still involved with this? Were you involved with NNAC? And
I got out in 2001, 2002, that time frame.
Yeah.
It had to do with, at that time, a gear system had spun out of Lucent. And the focus was very much on Wi-Fi and on fiber. Mm-hmm. And in 2002, there was a sort of a meltdown of the fiber market. And the gear systems went somewhat in a panic, and they pulled everything back to the United States.
Mm.
And at that time, I had the chance to move to the United States, or
do your own
to go do something else.
Yeah, yeah. And you decided to stay in the Netherlands.
And I had done Wi-Fi at that time for probably close to 15 years.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I go pioneer somewhere else.
RF is always to me a black art.
It is, in a way, it is.
It, you know, so much of what we do with computers is deterministic, you know. It's cause and effect. It's rigid. It's locked.
Right, right.
If something goes wrong, you may not know why, but you know there's a root cause. But why radio frequency, you can move something 1 inch, and wow. And I guess it's still deterministic, but it's just more chaotic.
It's very much more chaotic.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's also influenced by signals from outside, from
right.
other places in the world.
Right. It's like the weather. You don't know.
A solar blast, you know, and your your Wi-Fi gets a hiccup.
Are you amazed at the widespread use of Wi-Fi, and maybe even more by the success of it?
Yeah.
I was just on a cruise ship.
Just to be
here I am in the middle of the ocean,
right.
And I'm getting Wi-Fi in a metal boat, satellite to Wi-Fi throughout the boat, perfect reception everywhere. And high speed now.
And On planes. We had our first, you know, talks with Boeing in, you know, 2000, 2001 for integrating Wi-Fi. It took another decade or so.
Yeah.
We had our first meeting with General Motors, I believe, in 1997, 1998.
My car has Wi-Fi.
It,
That's
it
crazy.
It took a little bit. But, so on one hand, the vision was there.
Yes.
Yeah. I am amazed about the success of Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So you have AT&T, Lucent, working hard on Wi-Fi, and Ericsson in Finland working hard on Bluetooth.
Bluetooth.
Was it a race?
No, it was more a battle.
It was a battle.
It was a battle.
Because I think of them as parallel developments, because they do such different things. I didn't realize there was such competition.
But initially, the positioning of the technology was, you know, to stand in to try to grab as much land as possible.
Right.
So when Bluetooth was announced, it was literally announced by Ericsson and Intel, who was part of the first Bluetooth SIG.
Intel again,
well.
They got their fingers in every pie.
They got their fingers in everything, and they said you don't need Wi-Fi.
They didn't believe it.
This is pre-Centrino,
no, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
This is pre-Centrino. And the success of Apple and Wi-Fi pushed Intel into pushed the industry in understanding that there are different use cases for high-speed networking and wireless connectivity. So wireless connectivity is Bluetooth, and high-speed networking is Wi-Fi.
Well, that's kind of why I think of it as parallel, because they do different things. They're useful, and they're both useful, and almost every device has both.
Exactly. But in the early days, it was not the business cases were not very well understood.
Isn't that interesting?
So you're sitting
in the waiting room at Apple to talk to Steve Jobs. Is Dr. Hartson in another chair next to you waiting to talk to Steve next? Or did Apple consider Bluetooth?
I think they have looked at it as well, but then quickly realized that they needed a higher data rate.
They knew what they wanted.
They wanted the 10, 11 megabit per second that 802.11b was offering. And that higher data rate was the convincing point, I think.
And multiple devices.
Multiple devices, yeah. Initially, our Bluetooth does multiple devices as well, up to 8. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
You can have multiple devices to your phone, right?
Yeah, right.
But I think the vision of Apple was replacing Ethernet. And Ethernet at that time was 10 megabit per second, 100 megabit per second.
So it was perfect.
So it was closer aligned to the networking technology.
Yeah. Did you talk to Steve himself?
Mm-hmm.
Did he seem to understand?
Steve and Tim Cook were personally involved.
Tim was there too?
Yep.
Interesting.
Personally involved in getting the first deals closed.
Because at the time, Tim had to figure out how to make it. Right? Tim
had to get
the factories to make the parts and get the parts into the...
Well, we did that also for him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did the PCMCA card. But we got a lot of help. I mean, positive and positive, right?
So, and when you say we, it was NCR?
It was Lucent.
It was Lucent by then?
At that time.
Yeah, I remember Lucent. I remember Lucent chipsets, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those it was Lucent early... Semiconductor, and Lucent Semiconductor right. became Gear Systems.
That became a Gear, and then was Atheros at the same time?
Atheros was a startup that ran parallel when we were doing the... And Atheros was very much focused initially on access points.
Right.
So special chips for access points.
Right.
And then they further developed it into a business and ultimately ended up in the arms of Qualcomm.
They weren't trying to make it for the motherboard or for the computer.
Initially not.
They were just making a base unit. Base
but
station.
Later on, they expanded.
Yeah. So was your sense that you had to convince Steve of the value of this, or did he see it right away?
Steve saw it right away.
I will
be frank. I mean, the power of Apple and the power of Steve Jobs is recognizing when when markets are ready for new technologies.
And knowing what his customers wanted, I think, too, yeah?
The market readiness. And there was been talking about wireless for a long time. Mm-hmm. Actually, we had been pitching Wi-Fi in its early stages on the Apple Newton. We had made a sleeve that fit over an Apple Newton to provide wireless connectivity. You remember the Apple Newton, the PDA?
I have three in the other room with PCMCIA cards with a little pop-out RJ11, RJ45 jack that goes in there. You know those?
Exactly.
And I remember the wireless sleeves, but I don't think there were... Oh, I know what I had. This was in San Francisco. There was a company that was putting wireless internet access on telephone poles, Metricom.
Oh, Metricom, yep.
You remember them?
Yep, I remember.
That wasn't a Wi-Fi technology.
No, that was a wide area network equivalent.
Right. They were an ISP.
A pre cell phone, right?
Yeah.
A pre-smartphone, actually.
Right. Yeah. I had a Metricom. Yeah, look, just in case you don't believe me, here are three Apple Newtons. When you say, do you remember the Apple Newton? Not only do I remember it, I remember it sadly with fondness. I miss my Newton. So it was a sleeve you could put on here.
Right.
One of these still has, this has Velcro on the back for my Metricom modem.
For your Metricom modem, right.
Yeah.
There you go.
And that would plug into the modem, I think. I'm trying to remember how I would connect it, because these didn't have Ethernet. They did have PCMC. These are the kids who are watching today, they don't remember PCMCIA. They thought I was joking when I said you would put the phone cord into that. That was it. And see that? Apple. So Apple knew early on that getting online was going to be an important part
exactly.
of technology.
But the breakthrough was not with Newton. And when Steve Jobs returned to Apple.
This was John Sculley's
product. This was Sculley's product.
Yeah.
Right. And it was Steve Jobs returning to Apple and moving Apple from the desktop into the laptop space
right.
with the iBook.
Right.
And Steve Jobs was looking for what he calls a unique differentiator for the laptop.
Right.
And we've seen some emails from Michael Dell when Apple announced wireless on the iBook saying, you know, why don't we have this? And we had been talking with Dell for 2, 3, 4 years. And he was furious. Apple has this and we don't. Why is that?
That's such an interesting difference between Steve. It was both an asset and a liability to Apple, was that Steve was the whole thing, right? He knew what was going on. Nothing happened without him saying, okay. Michael Dell is a more traditional organization, very hierarchical. Dell's still that way. And so they've got managers at lower levels having conversations with you. Michael has no idea. There's nothing going on at Apple that Steve Jobs doesn't not only know but have his fingers in, right?
Exactly.
That's a pro and that's a con.
Yeah, it's a pro and a con.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Was it pretty easy once, you know, Jobs' eyes lit up and said, good, we're going to do this? Was it pretty easy getting it to work?
The technology was actually quite mature.
Yeah.
It was getting the right cost point, scaling the manufacturing. That were the challenges, but they were all operational, executional issues. The technology at that moment was standardized. It was working. It was mature. And that's what I'm saying, you know, sensing when the market is right, when the technology is right, and when that match is there, that was the power of Apple.
We're talking. This is so much fun. I'm sorry. We've gone back in time. We'll go forward in time in a minute. We're talking to Case Links. He is the founder of a company called Green Peak. You should have called it Green Links.
Green Peak is fine.
You know? Okay. Green Peak, which is doing something with wireless that's kind of a little more timely these days. And we'll get to that in just a moment.
We'll have more with Case Links in just a little bit. I hope you're enjoying the conversation, but I have to interrupt momentarily just to tell you about our sponsor, our great friends at Carbonite. They've been a sponsor for so long, and I'm so grateful to Carbonite because they have saved so many people. I was on the website the other day. I think it's 50 billion files saved. Billion with a B. That's 50 billion files that would have been lost forever without Carbonite. Think about your own experience. Is there something on your hard drive you just can't afford to lose? Something you would hate to, you'd cry if you lost baby pictures or wedding pictures or emails, voicemails from a loved one. I mean, there's got to be something on there. Even things like saved games or favorites, bookmarks. We have a lot of stuff on our computers, and if it's a laptop especially, it's so easy to lose. Carbonite makes sure you don't lose a thing. Go to Carbonite.com. You can try it free right now. You don't need a credit card. Use the offer code Triangulation. That way they know you heard it on this show. And we want the credit. 1.5 million people, and that's homes and offices, trust Carbonite to store their precious data. Let me kind of explain how it works. It's automatic. So you subscribe to Carbonite, you install it on your machine, and you forget about it. Or your servers or your network, they have different plans. But it's less than $5 a month for everything on a Mac or a PC. So let's start with that one. So you install it. This is what I do at home. I'm a home Mac. You know, by the way, I use Time Machine. I have an external backup on my Mac. But this is important because if somebody stole all my stuff at home or there was a fire, something, you know, disaster, the backups of the Time Machine be gone. But because I have Carbonite, it's real peace of mind. I've got an extra layer of protection. It's continuous. So as long as I'm online, it's backing up. I write one file, I change one file, boom, backed up to the cloud. It's automatic, so I don't have to think about it. In fact, I really only think about it once a year when I renew my subscription. And then install it and forget about it. Now, you don't have to. In fact, it's a good idea every once in a while to check what's on your Carbonite account. You can do that with your tablet, your phone. They have free apps for that. You can even log in on this machine here and see what's being backed up from my machine at home, even download files. So it's cloud storage too. Carbonite is really an amazing solution and a very affordable plan. Check it out. You can try it free. You don't need a credit card. Use our offer code Triangulation. And the other reason, besides giving us some credit, which is nice because I work hard on this show and I really want it to do well. And if you enjoy it, it's one way you can pay us back. But also, you get 2 months free when you decide to buy. So it benefits us both. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Use the offer code Triangulation for 2 months free with purchase. Now back to our conversation with Case Links.
Welcome back to Triangulation. Our guest is Case Links, founder and CEO of Green Peak, but a pioneer in wireless networking and Wi-Fi specifically. If you are online right now watching this, and you're not connected to the wall, you can thank Case and his team at Lucent for making that possible and for selling Steve Jobs on the notion that I guess Steve knew. But you got out of Wi-Fi. You got out of enough of that. I don't want to go to one more meeting debating the merits of beam forming, and I'm done.
Exactly.
Although, you have to be impressed with what AC is doing now. Oh, I mean, that is remarkable.
Absolutely. Very impressed. And also about the power of the technology. They've had such a leeway.
Lots of legs.
Lots of legs.
I mean, we're getting on our 802.11 AC Wi-Fi access points, 100 megabits, 150 megabits. The distance is huge. And on some of the devices, I think we have a couple of beam forming devices in here. It aims at you. It's amazing. It is mind-boggling.
It is.
Tech. That's one of the things I love about technology. You are a perfect example of how it both moves slower than you hope and faster than you ever dreamed.
That's the right way to formulate it, because a lot of people say technology goes very fast. Sometimes, to me, it feels like it goes very, very slow. But on the other hand, you have to realize how much needs to be done to get, say, to get a worldwide standard, right? I mean, that's...
Well, that brings us to home automation, which is something that has been bubbling underneath for longer than I think almost any technology I can remember. I remember going to Comdex and then CES and looking at the pavilion, the home automation pavilion. But part of the problem is there's been no standard. There's no 802.11 for IoT.
Well, there is 802.15.4.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey.
It's something.
Yeah, that's a good starting point.
And so what is now? Mm-hmm. You're going to have to help me here because you're behind Zigbee. Zigbee's your thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was X10, and there's Z-Wave, and now I think Google has its own mishmash of protocols,
right.
Thread and Weave,
right.
And
Brillo.
No wonder consumers, and then consumers, you know, they take their phone and they say, well, I want to talk to the doorbell. Oh, there's one app. I want to talk to the thermostat. There's
another
app,
right?
Oh, I want to talk to my garage door. There's another app. It doesn't talk to each other. And consumers, I think, like the idea of home automation, and particularly like the idea of saying out loud to your house, set the thermostat to 72, open the garage door,
right.
I'm about to leave, start my car. But it doesn't. The promise is much more like the early days of technology, where you have to just do it all yourself and figure it all out. Why don't we have?
Yeah.
What's the problem here?
It's a good question, because I hear that question many times.
Yeah.
What's taken so long? Actually, there's a simple answer.
Yeah.
It is very complex.
Yeah.
Computers are a very uniform platform worldwide. But anything in your home has its own standards, its own background. I usually give the example of door locks. Every country in the world has its own standard for door locks.
What, you mean my door lock's not the same as
the
Netherlands?
Absolutely. And the Netherlands is different than Belgium or Germany.
Oh, no,
or the
that's
UK.
Crazy.
I mean, it's like power plugs, right? I mean,
right, same thing,
same
isn't
thing.
It?
Same thing. All technology was invented over and over again.
Independently in different countries.
In different countries, yeah. Yeah, and what you would think, you would say, okay, you know, home automation should be very simple.
Right.
In reality, it's very, very complex because of this reason.
Let me show a slide from your site on Zigbee.
There
okay,
you,
you want to know how complex this is? Holy cow. You've got a HomeKit open and interconnect. You've got All Join, which I've never even heard of. You've got Bluetooth Mesh. You've got the Wi-Fi guys. You have 802.11, you got 802.15.4. But actually, if you are a network guru, you kind of recognize layers. You
right.
Know?
That's the first thing that is important to understand.
So tell us about layers.
Well, let's talk about layers for a second. When going back to Wi-Fi,
yeah.
The real underlying layer is IEEE 802.11. And on top of that, initially...
Is that a protocol?
You can call that a protocol.
Okay.
A physical protocol.
It's a physical protocol,
right.
That has a radio transmitter and receiver.
It says how loud you need to transmit and you know, what bandwidth, frequency you're using, et cetera,
okay.
Et cetera.
Okay.
A protocol is a set of agreements, right?
Yeah.
That you do things in the same way. Now, on top of the radio, you need also to interface with... You know, with the network,
right?
And that's also a protocol. You know, when and how are you going
your
to
handshake.
Package the handshakes, the packets? How
yeah.
are you going to put data in a
right.
data packet, etc.? Now, the interesting part is, you know, we tend to forget history very, very quickly. But the early days of networking, we had Ethernet, Token Ring, Token Bus, ArcNet.
That's right.
That was a big mess too.
It was. It was. You were either Novell or you were.
Do you remember
Cisco
Novell
or,
Network?
Yeah.
You remember IBM LAN Manager?
Absolutely.
Microsoft
LAN
Manager.
Oh, my God.
Banyan Vines.
Yeah.
You know, IBM SNA. There was.
You're right.
There was a big mess.
And
too.
Until Ethernet kind of became the de facto
TCP
standard.
TCP IP became
yeah.
the network, became the de facto
yeah.
standard.
Yeah.
And then everything starts to fall in place because everybody
so that's
wanted to
okay,
comply.
So there's the Ethernet layer is a physical layer. That's
mm-hmm.
Bob Metcalf's layer.
Right.
And then Vint Cerf's layer is on, riding on top
layer?
Of that,
right.
Which is TCP/IP. That's the packet, how you agree to talk, how data is stored or
exactly.
transmitted and all of that
exactly.
stuff. So there's a physical layer. And
there's a network layer.
Network layer. No. We're actually, there's seven layers, but we're going to make this a two-layer
cake. We're
going
to make it a little bit simpler. Exactly.
Okay. So home automation. We have the same issues, right?
There's a third,
there's more layers
to keep in mind.
There's application layer.
The application layer on top of that. And that's usually hidden by, say, Microsoft or the Apple operating system or by Unix or Linux nowadays. Yeah, so that are the three layers you have to keep in mind.
So those are your drivers that talk to the...
Your application.
So you launch Mosaic or Netscape or Internet Explorer, and it knows how to talk to a driver, which then talks to the hardware, which then talks to the network.
Exactly.
Okay. That's not too many layers. That all makes sense.
Pretty straightforward. Now, we are in somewhat of the same stage that the bottom layer now for home networking
is crazy.
Is 802.15.4.
Oh, it is standard.
It's standard. The bottom layer is now agreed.
Okay.
So,
what is the name? Is there a name besides that?
No, there's not a name. It's just IEEE 802.15.4.
Okay. 15.4. Okay.
It has been embraced by Zigbee.
Yep.
So if you say I'm Zigbee compliant, then you use 802.15.4.
Okay. Good.
One of the competing networking standards is Thread, but if you say you're Thread compliant, you're also using IEEE 802.15.4.
Thread is the Google implementation.
It's the Google
Nest,
but
it is 15.4.
But it is using the same radio.
Okay. I know the on-hub that Google makes, the Wi-Fi router they make, actually supports 802.15.4.
So there is agreement already on the bottom layer.
Yay!
So we are making progress.
Yay!
Now we are in a sort of...
We have our Ethernet.
Okay. Now we are in the stage of...
the middle layer.
Novell Network and IBM LAN Manager. And
the software running on top of
that. The networking software is not standardized yet.
Okay.
And big companies, they are battling this out right now.
So I'm looking at this. This is a great slide, by the way, that really helps understand this. Despite the fact that the first time you look at it, you might go, whoa.
Oh, my God.
Whoa. But you can see we have this physical link layer pretty well agreed upon. But now we have the network transport layer. There's RF4CE. And there's Pro. Pro is a mesh technology.
Pro is a mesh technology.
That means every device can talk to every other device.
Exactly.
And as peers, sort of.
As peers.
And share their connectivity with every device, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the original idea was that you can cover larger range with mesh.
Only one thing needs to be connected to the outside world. Everything can connect through.
Can connect via
each other. Yep. Mesh is a good description of that. Is that going to become more of a standard, or what is this RF4CE?
Well, RF4CE is a point-to-point or point-to-multipoint standard that you see in most of the remote controls being used nowadays.
Okay.
Because the whole idea is that with your remote control, you are already doing home networking.
Right.
And if you talk with your remote control to your set-top box, and your set-top box can talk to other devices in your house.
Right.
Then you see, so RF4CE is a step up of the operators, the Comcasts of the world.
They want this.
To get into the smart home.
And this is where this is one of the reasons we have problems, because every different company wants to get their own wedge in the door. And nobody wants to use Google's system or Zigbee because we want our Comcast system. So RF radio frequency for consumer electronics is that
right.
RF4CE. But they're not incompatible?
Well, they talk via routers. At this moment, they talk via...
They have a translator.
Translators in between.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of... The market is learning about applications. And the most successful applications, the networking that is being used by these applications... They'll start weighing through in the market. That's our expectation.
When I say Zigbee or Z-Wave, what layer is that?
Zigbee is covering a vertical from application to network to radio.
So it says we combine this physical layer with this transport layer with this application layer.
Right. Z-Wave is the same. But the Z-Wave radio is, we call it a proprietary solution because there's only one company that offers this solution.
Interesting.
Which is Sigma Designs.
Right.
But others have licensed it. No, they're using it.
They're buying it from Sigma.
Okay. Right.
And then I see frameworks, which are, Apple's HomeKit, of course, is the best known framework. But Microsoft and Intel and Google and everybody else is going to do their own framework, right?
And the framework is sort of how to pull all the applications into one application and then talk down. And
now
the industry is still sorting this out. Hey, you asked why isn't it there
now
today?
Now I know.
It's the complex. It's way more complex than Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But there's good news. I think,
give me the good news, please.
I think you should know the good news.
What's the good news?
The good news is that people start to really appreciate smart home applications. You know, like
they are. I agree.
Like thermostats, like security.
The Nest thermostat made a lot of sense. Security is probably the first thing people use, right?
Smart meters, so that you can see your energy consumption, that you can control your energy consumption. Yep. There will be convergence over time. But we have to learn what are the values of all these different applications.
As it stands right now, and one of our sponsors is SmartThings, the Samsung hub. And their idea was, well, we'll make a hub that can talk to Zigbee and Z-Wave and can kind of intermediate, you know, kind of a gateway, in effect, to the various.
Essentially, yeah.
Is that how this is going to be solved, or is one protocol going to win? What do you think?
We think that ultimately maybe one or two protocols will survive.
Right.
That's our expectation.
But this has been the problem all along, is that there isn't a winner. Right?
Not yet, because we are still learning about the value of the applications.
You need a Steve Jobs to come along, as he did with Wi-Fi, make it happen.
For instance, or we just need to realize, I mean, things in the home are different. This is my favorite example. You have central door locking in your car, right?
Yeah.
But you don't have central door locking in your house.
God, I'd love that.
Don't you think that's strange?
I go around every night and check the windows, we have many sliding glass doors, the front door, the garage door. Yeah, I have to. That's every night. I'm like a night watchman. I might as well carry a lantern.
And you cannot even buy a car anymore
that
without central door locking. Yeah. So, and why is that? It's because of the complexity that we need to learn how to get these things implemented.
And everybody, forget Europe and the U.S., in my house, every lock is different. Some you flip up, some you flip down, some you turn a knob.
Exactly. not exactly. They also need to standardize and become, more harmonized.
As long as you're doing this, can you also, because I have to remember to turn off the cuckoo clock every night because it keeps me awake. Can you just add that? Can you just add that into the lock the doors and turn off the cuckoo clock?
Put your pillow on it.
But we often talk about, and when we do the ads for smart things, we talk about this dream of being able to say, to your phone, good night, and everything kind of just happens. The lights go down or whatever it is. But people realize very quickly, the people who want to do that this is a lot of work. You have to get every device talking, and it's just crazy.
And there is no standard interface.
And there's no standard interface.
To all the devices. So that's why it's just taking longer. And there's something else as well, because ultimately I think there's something else setting in as well. You have to keep that in mind also. The Internet of Things is not so much about things as well as about data analytics that understands what needs to take place.
Right.
If there is nobody in your house and the back door is not locked, wouldn't it be nice if there was a butler that locks your back door?
Right.
Yes,
because it understands.
You do not even want to get a phone call that's, your back door is not locked. No, you want your back door being locked.
Yeah.
You may get a message.
I locked it. If you want me to unlock it, let me know, right?
Exactly. So, and that's also a little bit the smart home. I think it's a wrong term. The home is not so much smart as well as, there need to be data analytics that connects the devices in your house to something that understands what is normal in your house.
Yeah.
And that is kind of happening as well. That is in development.
So Apple has HomeKit. Is HomeKit compatible with this, or is it kind of saying, no, we're going to do this?
Apple HomeKit is on its own.
It's its own pillar.
It's its own ecosystem.
How about Google with Thread and Wave and Brillo?
Fully in development, building an ecosystem.
So they're not equals. HomeKit is one thing. Google is doing something else.
I would say they are comparables.
They are.
They're trying to solve the same problem, but coming in from a complete different angle.
You work with Thread, right?
We work with Thread.
Yeah.
Because it's an 802.15.4 radio.
Right.
We are a radio company.
Right.
We make radio chips.
Right.
And in a way, what is built on top of our radio chips, we try to serve everyone.
But that's easy. That's software.
Well, software is not easy. I've learned that very much. But we try to be agnostic.
The software guys say hardware is easy, so I don't.
Exactly. We try to be agnostic right. for what software runs on top of it.
And then Intel has its own
IoTivity of the open internet.
They use the right word, open interconnect, but is it open?
It's open, yeah.
Is Google's open?
It's IP donated to the to the Linux Foundation.
Oh, nice. So it's truly open.
They run the OIC. Same with AllJoin.
AllJoin?
That's a similar activity from Qualcomm.
Okay.
Very comparable. Google is a little bit more complex.
Some is open?
Thread is open.
Yeah.
It's a standard very much only focusing on the network layer, not on the application layer.
Right. They've got...
Only on the network layer.
Brillo is a application.
And Brillo is, again, very comparable to HomeKit.
Right.
More an operating system-like
And it's Google's Brillo, and that's, app like Apple's
and,
HomeKit.
And Brillo then competes with HomeKit.
Right.
And we'll have to see how that evolves.
Is Microsoft in this? Because they were very early on all in on automation, and it seems like they've pulled back a little bit.
Correct.
They're waiting for somebody to become
that. We don't see a lot of Microsoft in the standards bodies. They're concentrating on other things.
They have other things. But you know what? They are as a cloud company and a data company. So my guess is, Satya Nadella is saying, well, we'll figure out. Whenever somebody wins, we'll be there to do the analytics, to do the support, the cloud.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a smart...
That would be my guess.
That's what I would do if it were up to me. Let's get out of the fray. Get out of the battle. We're talking with Case Links, who is the founder of GreenPeak, but also a pioneer in wireless connectivity. You can thank Case for all of the wireless things you do these days.
So much.
Talk Steve Jobs into putting Wi-Fi in the Apple laptop of the time. What was it, the iBook?
iBook.
And changed the world. Thank goodness we had a standard. Now we're sitting here with this kind of Tower of Babel called home automation. And, of course, as we get all of these things on the Internet, already we're seeing issues. You mentioned the issue of the beauty of having a common button to lock all the doors in your car. But now we've seen that these fobs can easily be hacked. And there's a very simple transmitter you can buy on eBay for $20 that will let you get into many of these cars. So... A lot of these are designed not really thinking about the security issues. What do we do?
The security is an issue, and it will continue to be an issue.
I think it's holding it back in some ways, because I think people hear about these problems or the Ring doorbell. You can take the doorbell and steal somebody's Wi-Fi connection. And they're saying, by the way, you can't do that anymore, but you could. They're saying... I'm not going to buy. I'm worried. I'm not going to buy these things. I'm putting an intruder in my home. I'm giving some machine access to my internet, which is going to then give my Wi-Fi to anybody who wants to get in.
Right. The standard thing is people always make trade-off between benefits and risks.
Of course. Of course.
My favorite example is cars. How many people are using cars and still
It's very dangerous.
Car is a dangerous thing, right?
It's very dangerous.
It's even way more dangerous than flying, etc.
It's terrible.
So people, in a way, are risk takers.
Yeah.
And the challenge in the industry is if the security is broken, fix it. You get updates from Apple or from Microsoft for your operating system. Many, many of these updates are to fix security issues. Your Android phone gets updated.
That's a good point. I mean, a phone is a security
with too. With the smart home, there will be security issues, and there will be issues that need to be fixed.
They need to be updatable. That's the happy ending of the Ring doorbell story, which is they were able to push a fix out before it was publicly acknowledged, and they patched it.
Exactly. So it's up to you to weigh the benefits of the smart home versus the risk you're running, that's something the industry has to learn, has to get comfortable with. Wi-Fi initially, why did it take so long? People didn't trust that data going through the air, you know, were
secure. They were kind of right.
They were right. They were absolutely right. But the benefits started to outweigh the risks.
Right.
And in particular, the first Wi-Fi was bad from a security.
I read an article from a Dutch paper last November that scared the heck out of me, why public Wi-Fi is so dangerous. I don't know if you saw it. A guy sits down in a cafe and snarfs up people's Wi-Fi, is able to do all sorts of things. I started using a VPN and
recommend it.
Yeah, from now on, I use a hardware firewall everywhere.
Yep.
I use public Wi-Fi. In other words, these are solvable problems. You just
solvable,
have to be aware of them.
We cannot kind of, you know, just ignore them. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And that's not what the industry is doing.
Right.
Not at all. Because there is a very strong tendency to fix these problems.
So you're in favor of mesh, the idea of mesh networks.
There are mixed feelings about mesh. Everyone talking to everyone in a mesh network, you know, how many times do you have your refrigerator talking with your toaster?
Probably doesn't need to.
Doesn't need to.
And on the other hand, if my refrigerator has connectivity, lending a cup of connectivity to my toaster is not a bad thing.
We think on the longer term, star networks, like Wi-Fi originally was developed as a mesh too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Everybody to talk with everyone.
Yeah.
But
you're right. Star is better.
It's now a star. And what's the advantage?
You have a hub and spokes.
Hub and spokes. Mesh was interesting when hardware was not too reliable. Because if one link was broke down, then you had an alternative.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if you have a star, the hardware is so reliable nowadays that if something breaks down, you want to know what it is.
Right.
So then you can fix it immediately.
Okay.
And we think that probably many Zigbee implementations will be star implementations, despite that the fact that Zigbee has mesh capability.
Right. So you could go either way. And this is, by the way, what Green Peak does. You make the Zigbee silicon, the chipsets.
We make the chips that go into the product that enable connectivity. Correct.
What would you, given that we want home automation, we want this capability. It's too complicated right now. It's just crazy. What do we need to do? I'm sure you're working towards this. You've been here before, once before. So,
yep.
What do we need to do?
What we are focusing on are useful applications for people and using that as stepping stones. I mean, one example that I gave was the remote control, right?
Right.
I mean,
oh, I would love that.
I mean, that's having that on a standard RF technology is just a step forward, enabling other steps. Another thing that we are doing
you
is...
You can do Zigbee over RF4CE, right?
Zigbee over RF4CE.
So I could have a remote control. But,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So another thing that we are doing is home monitoring. That is, you know, for elderly people living at home.
Yeah.
So
huge.
The sensors, and there are a few sensors in the home, get an ID of the pattern of somebody living at home alone, and then, you know, the caretaker
change in a pattern
can recognize a change in the pattern and sends a message. And that's our very valuable applications. We are extending this now into family lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I can see whether my son or daughter comes home from school.
Right.
And
I do that with my Ring doorbell.
Well, there you go, right? I mean, so
but I'd love to have the data analytics. People are nervous, though, about privacy implications with that.
It's a good other point, yeah. And also there's a balance, right? I mean, let's take Facebook and privacy versus Facebook.
Right.
People see a lot of advantages of Facebook, and they have to give up some privacy.
Right.
And, you know, it's your choice.
Right.
Now, you can get sucked into giving up too much privacy. Well, we have to learn the hard way and take a step back.
As long as you know what the transaction is explicitly. Like Google now, I'm glad for Google to know everything I'm going to do because it gives me such valuable insights into that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have a comparison from the old world. There is legislation that basically does not allow anybody to open a letter that is not addressed to you.
Right.
Right. That legislation has not kind of migrated into the age of
the
internet. And it's in a way too bad because when that legislation migrates, you get the same kind of level of protection as an individual for things that you want to kind of keep private.
Right.
Or that you want to share with a person that is on the letter.
Right.
If you write an email, it's almost like public for the government or for the...
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but the interesting part, and, you know, we are all learning. And this technology from a, you know, a bigger historical view is all very new. And a lot of technology people do not really understand the reach of what is being invented, let alone that you take lawmakers who haven't studied technology need to write laws to protect individuals from the consequences of technology.
Right.
But, you know, something simple as, you know, let's expand the secrecy of a letter to an email. That an email is as secret as a letter was. I mean, that kind of thinking needs to start to percolate amongst the lawmakers to see how the internet can become more private, more secure. We are learning. We are all learning.
We always get the sense that in the EU, the EC is much more privacy focused. And do you feel like they're doing a good job?
The jury is out. We'll see in the future who did the right job.
Right.
But the fact that action is being taken to take action and to learn from taking action is way better than just leave it alone.
Yeah. We're very laissez-faire in the United States. And
maybe a little bit too much. Yeah. And maybe in Europe we are kind of jumping the gun too fast.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. Let's learn from each other and see what the pain points
are. I
agree.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be gained from a safe and secure internet for all of us.
Yeah.
I saw a quote recently that after the invention of fire, the breakthrough is the invention of internet is mind-boggling. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Things that we have now at our fingertips.
Right.
Compared to, say, 20 or 30 years ago. It's amazing.
And it happens so gradually, we take it for granted.
We take it for granted, right? We don't even remember how life was before.
I had to go to a library to find out who was the 8th president. What are you talking
Market
about?
Market research, you know? I mean, we have table conversations, my wife and I, and then she asked me a question. And I said, let me look it up. No, I don't want to have any computers on the dinner table. Well, but you want an answer to the question. What do you want? Do you want conversation for the sake of conversation, or do you want an answer to the question?
We could make it up. Or we could find out.
Right. What do we want?
Yeah.
So, it's mind-boggling. I think we have to learn how to deal with it in a good way.
It's a very exciting time, a very challenging time. There are problems, but as you've seen in your own example of your own life, these can be solved. It just takes time and work, a lot of work.
And I'm optimistic that we can fix the problems in privacy and in security.
Would you like Z-Wave to just go away?
Let me say a few positive words. Home RF, do you remember Home RF?
Yeah.
Home RF was an early competitor of Wi-Fi.
Right.
And it helped people to understand the value of wireless. Z-Wave, is an early technology for helping people to understand the value of applications for the home.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Take Wi-Fi. We had many generations of Wi-Fi.
Right.
We'll have many generations of Zigbee. And Z-Wave will just fold into one of these other generations.
Right.
It will not be Z-Wave forever. But we learn about these applications that have been enabled through Z-Wave in a very early stage. And the faster we learn, the more fun we can have.
That's great. Well, I am excited about the future of this, and I appreciate the work you've done already and the work you're going to do to make it happen. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
CaseLinks, greenpeak.com. Is there anything else you want to tell people? You want to get them to write to their member of Congress or anything? Or just go out and buy some stuff?
I think my kind of message would be, there is a lot things in the world can go better and better if we use technology in an accountable way.
I agree. That's a great motto. I like it. That'll be my motto from now on.
Okay,
thank you, Case.
Good.
It's really great meeting you. Thanks
Welcome.
For coming in. We do triangulation normally every, this is a pre-record, but we do normally every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC. You can watch live if you want. Chat room is always hugely valuable during the show. That's why we call it triangulation, me, a guest, and you in the chat room. But if you can't watch live, don't worry. On-demand audio and video always available after the fact at our website, twit.tv/TRI. Or on YouTube, youtube.com/triangulation. Or, of course, best way to do it, subscribe You can go to any podcast application, search for TWIT or Triangulation. You can, of course, get the TWIT apps on every platform, Apple, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Roku. There's 5 Apple TV apps now. Thank you to all of our great fans who are developers as well. Just find an app, subscribe. You don't want to miss an episode of Triangulation. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.